Morning, Will. Good morning. In through the nose, out through the mouth. That's it. In through the nose and out through the mouth.
God, your hands are getting really low here.
No, no, no. Just keep the eyes closed.
Is this normal?
Settle into your sits bones. Okay? All right? Okay. And feel the spine stacking and the neck
You
rolling.
Don't need to feel my spine. Wait a second.
Yeah, what is this? This is a little bit of tension right there, huh?
All right, let's get to an all-new Smartless.
Smart.
What were you? What kind of student were both you two? Hi, I'm Jason.
oh, hi, Jason.
Were you guys both smarties? I don't think so.
No.
I'm gonna make a guess here.
No.
Like B's, you know, solid B's.
And well, in college, it was really bad for me because I would always copy, and so my eyes hurt because my face would be forward, but my eyes would be looking really hard down to the left.
Right.
At like a little computer watch.
No,
at
the guy next to me, and either or whoever was on either side.
Really?
Right.
Yeah.
You were a habitual cheater.
Totally.
And was he hip to it? Was he kind of like
giving
you a side wink and showing it to you?
No. One of those big lecture halls. You know, I'd be like, my eyes would be like this, and it hurts so bad.
Oh.
But how did you trust that they knew the answer? Do you know what I mean?
Because any guess was better than mine.
Better than your brain.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just talking about this recently. I didn't cheat in high school or anything like that.
I didn't in high school.
No, I'd be willing to do poorly. I had moments where I was okay, and then I just didn't.
Have you ever cheated in anything, Will?
I've never really like stolen anything. I've never really, you know. One time, this is a true story. The only sort of really vivid memory I have of that is when I was a kid, when a bag of chips was still 25 cents. Uh-huh. And it was like a crowded thing at the convenience store after school, and there were a bunch of kids in there. I was probably 11, maybe 10. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck it, and I had to catch a thing, so I just took the chips. And I felt so guilty overnight.
Will.
I went in the next day, and I put a quarter on the counter at the store.
Bless
and walked out.
Willie, a bless you. Yeah. Willie Arnett. Willie.
I know. I felt it ate away at me. I couldn't, like, I was like, oh, I can't.
Have you ever done anything that would justify you getting arrested that you've gotten away with?
No.
I did. I was arrested.
You don't have to tell me. You can just say, yes, I did get away with a couple of things I could have been arrested for had it been caught.
No.
I was arrested for that turkey sandwich.
Were you?
Yeah.
A turkey sandwich?
I told you I stole a turkey sandwich in college. I was really drunk and the cops arrested me. I told you that.
That is...
I don't remember.
I don't know if I've ever heard a more on-brand arrest story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was in it.
Well, because the turkey sandwich was definitely on white bread with mayo only.
Of course, yeah, it was wrapped. You know, it was like in a 7-Eleven or what we call a white hen. It was called white hen.
Yeah, sure.
And
sure.
And I was with my friends. I was so hungry and I didn't have any money, so I just stole the turkey sandwich. I was really drunk. We were eating out in front and the cop just stands right in front of me. He's like, hey, buddy, you're coming with me. And I was like, for a turkey sandwich? And he put me in the back, and I was riding in the back. And
were you cuffed? Did he cuff you?
I don't remember. Probably. And I was.
You probably asked for it. You said, wait a second, you're not going to cuff me?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, use these, and you produced your own cuffs.
I'm pretty sure I need nipple clamps.
I think you have to cuff yourself to me.
Can you put the lights on and the siren?
I know my rights. My rights are, you need to cuff me. I just start yelling. It was for a turkey sandwich. And he took me to the station and I had to sit there until somebody I didn't know gave me $100 to get out.
I mean,
And it's a long story. This is a crazy story.
You got mystery
what
bailed?
What a crazy waste of resources, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
What a crazy waste of resources.
That's what I was saying in the back seat. I mean, I'm. It's horrible that I said this.
Run in
it's
your
horrible.
Mouth.
Yeah, yeah, I was running in my mouth because I was drunk. I was running my mouth and I said, isn't there a worse crime happening on campus right now? Like, isn't somebody getting like sexual harassment or something?
The next go-to is, my taxes pay your salary.
Yeah.
And I didn't.
Sure,
that's how, all right. Yeah, there come
I'm
the cops.
Boss. I'm
Yeah. Yeah. Then the cops. I'm pretty sure you're supposed to pin me down on the floor.
Like hog tie, I think.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to turn the light. Light should be a little bit lower, don't you think? And shouldn't we have a glass of wine? Where are we? What's going on?
What about how I sent Shawnee, I cut and pasted the top 10 vanilla ice creams out there. And, you know,
what was number one? Thought,
number one is Haagen-Dazs. Of course, it's always it's the best one.
So good. Yeah. Haagen-Dazs. Although we like McConnell's.
Yeah, that's true. McConnell's. McConnell's. I think McConnell's was on the list. Do they still make rum raisin?
Probably. Why, do you want some?
I just haven't had rum raisin in so long.
Well, it's got raisins in it. Why would you want ice cream with raisins in it?
Probably. And rum.
Now, what do they do about the rum there? Do they somehow take the alcohol out of the rum?
No, no. They're putting 100 proof rum in the fucking ice cream and selling it to kids.
Well, but I want to know. How did they get the rum flavor?
And there's
rum
still cocaine in Coca-Cola.
And the kids are like, hey, can I get another scoop?
Get another scoop.
All right. I'm sorry, surprise guest.
I know. The guest, no. I like that we said, you know, we had a great segue before about being justified, because this guy is justified in a lot of stuff that he does.
Oh, nice,
I will say. He is a multi-Emmy nominated actor. He has a crazy diverse list of film and TV credits that are just insane. Comedies, dramas. Most recently, I think that everybody was delighted to see him in FX's highly anticipated series, Alien, the Alien Earth franchise.
Oh, my God.
That's a Noah Hawley vehicle.
He's also the Noah Hawley vehicle. He was also in Apple TV show last year's Stick, which has got a second season coming up. Soon we're going to be able to see him in with a crazy cast with Anna Taylor-Joy and Annette Bening and a bunch of people in this new Apple TV crime thriller series, Lucky.
Who is this tasty guest?
He's a guy who, you know, and the reason I say he's justified because he was also Emmy-nominated for the show he starred in called Justified. You know him also from Deadwood.
Shit.
You guys, it's
of
the
course.
Wonderful, and I'm so excited, here. Timothy Oliphant.
Timothy. Hi, buddy. Oh,
hello, gentlemen.
A year and a day.
God. What a pleasure. Dude. I was on the set of Justified with, and I was working with Eric Roberts, and he's driving, and I'm sitting shotgun, and I say, there was all those ND cops around in the scene, and we're supposed to pull out in the shot, and right before we rolled, I said, I gave you $20. You just hit one of these, bump one of these cops. And he goes, I hit a cop once. Not a good idea. And I was like,
oh, jeez.
I was like, wait, sorry, sir. With your vehicle? He goes, no, I hit him.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And he said, it was a bad idea. They had me on the ground so fast. And then from then on, I was just Eric the cop hitter Roberts. Couldn't catch a break. And I say to him, I ask him, how many times you've been arrested? And he said something like in the double digits. And but then he qualified it because he said half of those were before he turned 18. And I wasn't sure how to take that. But I was taking it. And then he looks at me and goes, you ever been arrested? And I said, no. And he goes, pussy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I told him I was at swim practice. You know what I mean?
Happened to me once.
Oh, I love Jason's story. It's
full,
so
in
good.
Full pussy style. It involves
Monaco.
Yeah, I was arrested in Monaco for being drunk and disorderly in a nice little leopard outfit, fresh from the casinos, all banged up on, you know, cheap champagne and a pocket full of chips.
Oh, yeah,
just got rocked.
That's the name of his biography.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Hey, but Sean, it sounds like we found a hack for you. If you ever do want the hog tie, you just got to punch the cop in the face.
Yeah, I just wrote it down. I just wrote that down.
You got it? Yeah.
Note to self.
That's why, listen, I'm here for you. That's why I brought it.
Well, first, it's so nice to see you. I've seen all of Alien Earth. You're amazing in everything, but I just,
when
Will said that, I love that show. You're amazing in it.
Did you see Sean's face? I knew that once I said that. And he's like,
yeah, such a good show. It's coming back, no?
Hey, cool it, man.
Yeah, we start shooting in a little bit. Thank you for asking.
You sound excited about it. You
know what? Tell me you guys aren't the same. We shot the first season in
Thailand or something, right?
In Thailand. We were in Bangkok.
Oh, wow.
And it was just a magical experience. What? But
I heard it was a nightmare. I mean, there's a lot of tough conditions there. I know people.
Don't put them on the spot.
Go ahead.
Oh, there's nothing better than listening to actors bitch. Come on. It's the name of my book, but don't be afraid to bitch and other tips for young actors.
Well, it's so hot. Huh? There,
look at us,
right?
This group here, you know what they call it? Like a murder of crows and like a flock of seagulls. Yeah. You got a little complaint of actors.
Yeah. It doesn't have the air conditioning of the Warner Brothers lot down there.
Listen, I'm with you. I'm getting to my bitch, bitching, which is when we were there, it was quite magical. It's hot, but it's a magical, crazy, amazing place. And the more you're there, the more you know it, the more you like it. And at the same time, you're like, I hope I don't have to come back.
Yeah.
So for season two, they say, please don't go back. And they said, no, we're not going to go back. We're going to go to either London or Budapest. And no offense to, but I was like, oh, please, London, right? Yeah. London. And then you get the call from your agent says, hey, good news, season two, London. And I was like,
God damn.
Can't shoot in L.A.?
I mean, yeah.
It goes that quick. That quick. It's like, fuck, I gotta leave.
So what is that? What's your process of the thought, like getting comfortable with that? Like, we are vagabonds, right? Like, you start the process very quickly. Okay, I'm gonna be spending 5 months in a foreign land, in a hotel or rent a place, whatever. It's like, you immediately start thinking about, you know,
logistics.
Do you have a wife and children that you're going to have to figure out how to detail or whatever? Your whole life at home is all upended. Start to bitch about that for me.
The wife and children?
Yeah.
Well, you'd start there. But just getting uprooted.
35 years
again,
of marriage this summer.
Oh, that's great. That's amazing.
Seven really good ones. Right now we're empty nesters.
Yeah.
Okay.
You guys are not, none of, no,
I'm
you're
half,
not there.
I'm half empty.
Jason's half. I got one more year until my first one goes to college.
Yeah. So they just leave you. So just so you know, like if I did it again, I wouldn't have gotten so close.
That's serious. I've talked about it before. I think I tried to pick fights with my older one. Yeah, just so it wouldn't hurt so bad.
Does she? Yeah. Your oldest?
She's 19, but she ended up going to school in town, so it didn't hurt quite as bad.
Oh, did she just become like weeks before leaving? Just like, who is this fucking devil that's taking over my child?
Right. Yeah. Well, no, she's a lot of you know, as they do at that age, they spend a lot of time outside the house. So it's not as somebody smart once said, you're not losing your 10-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, like their wings are flapping well before they.
Yeah. And she's a particularly good kid, I will say. She's a nice kid.
She's a good kid. But there's a Tom Pappas, has the joke that when your kids leave, nobody prepares you how hard it's going to be to pretend to be sad. But even the best kids, they tend to act up right before they leave, right? They tend to be like, they got to.
It's part of their emancipation. Yeah,
it makes it easier to leave.
Yeah, well, so you're getting ready to go to London, and you've got to like switch it all up. You got to kind of like start to prep. I'm about to do the same for 6 months to Atlanta, and I'm like, every day I think about how's that going to go? How's that going?
Wait a second, hold on. Breaking news here.
Willie's got a big job. It's super.
No, but
exciting.
Anyway, but six months
in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Well, how come I don't know about this yet?
Because you're not on my call sheet. I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
Can't you just like hit me with a memo or something?
but so like that, you know what that, we've done it before. So you know what that's like.
It's hard.
So you're getting ready to go to, and overseas.
What's the hardest part for you? It's always the transition, right? I don't know. You tell me. Once you're there, I feel like it's always lovely.
Yeah,
it is. Yes, but if you've got like Will's got kids back at home, so they're not going to be able to be with you.
Yeah, I forget. Yeah, I didn't. I was very fortunate. I got so lucky. I mean, partly by design and partly just because I failed at getting jobs. But I more or less got to work and live in LA for the majority of my kids.
Was justified in LA?
I literally had Deadwood for 3 years and then Justified for, I think it was six. And then we did this thing, Santa Clarita Diet for a couple. And they all shot here.
In Santa Clarita, I'll bet.
They were all in Santa. I basically lived, I thought I was in show business.
But even in town, aren't you like, I can't wait to get home?
Oh, yeah.
By the way, even in town, you're like, I got to go to the Valley?
Yeah.
Right. That's where the real complaint. Why can't I shoot at the Fox lot? Like,
right. Well, my kids were small. It was great. Mm. I just show up to work to take naps. You know that. So when my kids were really small, I was like, look, I just go to work so I can get some sleep.
Yeah. I know. We used to have an office. Jason would complain that I didn't want to go to my office. And then I had another office for my company. And I'd go there and I'd show up and see my partner. And I'd be like, hang on a second. And I'd go in, shut the door, and I'd get on the couch and take a nap on my couch.
Oh, God, Will.
I know, because I'm tired. I was tired, man.
I know.
You know, dude, I started going through your credits. And I was going to say at the top, you have so many credits. You've done so much stuff of such variety. It's insane, man. I mean, you are like, you're so unbelievably versatile. And when you started as an actor, well, first let's get, you were born in Hawaii and that you were raised in California. Mm-hmm. But when you started, when you were first a young actor, did you have like a particular lane you thought you wanted to go in? Because you've eliminated the lanes. All the dotted lines evaporated for you a long time ago on whatever road you're on.
Well, you're very kind, first of all. And by the way, back at you, because I just saw, literally just a few nights ago, is this thing on? That's the title, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What a lovely, lovely performance. Oh, and just lovely. So
isn't
like,
he great? He's,
lived yeah. in and present. Like you weren't, you know, that lovely thing where you're like, this just must be what he's like. Because, you know, and I obviously your comedic work is off the charts. So it was so...
He's got it all.
Range, my God. It was really just a lovely, lovely, beautiful, lived-in performance. So
Sean wasn't terrible in it either. Look at Sean.
Sean was delightful.
My God. Which one were you? From that shoot.
Yeah, that's a good question. Which one were you?
I was either Steven or Robert or something like that. Or Jeffrey. I was one of those.
You, now that I look at you, I'm like, yeah, you were there.
You guys all have this, by the way. You guys all have the crazy range. Sean, you're like, in Will and Grace, you're like doing physical comedy at like the ultimate level of effortlessness, and then you're on stage doing like this incredible dramatic work.
Well, mm-hmm. thank you. Yeah, I know. Everybody's really good.
And Jason, you also, you do the acting and you do the voiceovers.
Oh, you are an actor.
It's huge.
You are an actor.
You go from both.
You are an actor. Right. Now that I see you again, now I'm looking at you.
This is amazing.
I remember you from the Ozarks.
Everybody's really amazing.
Right. So, but it's sort of back to my question, and I don't know. I kind of. Actually, you know what I'm going to say to all of you guys? But Timothy, I want to hear from you first because I listen to these ding-dongs all the time. When you started, were you like, because I remember I moved to New York. I'll start. I wanted to be a dramatic actor. I thought, because I didn't know any better. I didn't know anything about comedy or how you get to it. So I was like, I want to be a dramatic actor. Did you have that? Were you like, I want to be taken seriously. I want to do important stuff. You know, the stuff that we as young
men
think.
You don't think acting is comedy. You think acting is drama.
Yeah.
Right.
Again, memory's not a reliable narrator here, but my favorite actors were actors who gave comedic, dramatic performances. I always felt like De Niro knew he was being funny in those roles, even the most dramatic roles. He must have known, right?
Yeah.
He must.
Yeah.
When he's doing Taxi Driver, he knows that's funny, right?
Right.
Doesn't he?
There's some moments, for sure.
I wonder. That's a good question. He must.
Right? I just assume when he's doing that, you talking to me, he knows that that's comedic timing that's happening there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, did you see him in King of Comedy?
Well, exactly, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible, incredible acting performance.
So when he did comedy and some people were like, who knew he could do comedy? Yeah. I was like, raised my hand. I was like, well, I think it was there from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like Will Ferrell.
Oh, yeah, Will.
Ferrell's playing these eccentric characters that are funny because they're eccentric, but it takes great acting chops to be believably eccentric.
And I think this is the flip side, which is like the best comedic performances are really dramatic.
I think the through line is always it's commitment, right? And so you're committed. We know, you know, as long as you're committed to the bit, whether it's dramatic or comedic, you have to be committed. And Jason, to your thing, like you can never wink, which is why when you see people who are doing stuff, when they're too aware, then you're like, okay, I don't buy it as much. But if somebody's committed to the thing, you recognize that as feeling authentic.
And then one of the funniest things I think is when people commit to being non-committal. You know, like when you do really bad acting on purpose. That's one of the funniest. I love that. You know, when you see somebody doing bad acting
for real.
Yeah, like sing for real.
We'll be right back.
And now back to the show.
Timothy, do you know Sing for Real?
No.
You have this thing. Yeah. Thoreau came up with it years ago, which is, it's so embarrassing.
Yeah, it makes your
so
skin
like if
crawl.
You're driving in the car with a friend or whatever, or a song comes on the radio, mm-hmm. and if you say to the other person, Sing for Real, they have to sing that song and they can't do any say it's like Satisfaction by the Stones. You can't do you can't put anything on. You have to do it as real as possible.
Yeah, and it's really uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable. It makes your skin crawl. Like yeah. We did it in the documentary too, but I had Will do it in the car one time, and I couldn't even look at him. It was so, it was horrible. Yeah.
It's the worst feeling. Like
driving with your pants off.
Yeah.
And it's funny you said Satisfaction, because I don't think of that as being like, singing it for real, yeah. but it is, no matter what, you really are saying, like this fucking man comes on the radio, you're right? And telling you how white your shirts can be, and he can't be a real man, like you're Timothy, in it.
Yeah, sing for real Satisfaction. You have to sing it totally real right now.
No.
Yeah.
Don't make him do it.
Do it.
Who, me?
Yeah. You have to do it. Go.
He's not doing it.
God,
you have to do that shit, so Timothy.
It's so rough to do.
See, because you just thought about it. You just thought about it. You're like, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Yeah. I'm looking at Will, and I'm thinking I have to do it based on that reaction. Anything not to do it.
You can't.
Give me some lyrics. This is not singing, though. I don't know. Okay, I can't sing. Let's start there.
You can't do like a Mick Jagger impersonation.
No,
you have to do it. You have to do it.
I can do.
No,
you can't. You have to sing it like you're recording it for real.
You have to do it. Okay.
So I just was listening to this yesterday, and if I'm not mistaken, had I not said, when a man comes on the radio, tells me useless information. Is the guy on the radio giving the useless information, or is he telling him how white his shirts can be? Come on, buddy. Who's telling him how white his shirts can be, and who's telling him useless information just to drive my imagination?
Let me see.
DJ. He's yelling at the DJ.
My imagination.
Okay. When I'm driving in my car, and the man comes on the radio,
tells me how white my shirts can be.
About some useless.
What does he say it there? God damn it.
No, it's later. Hang on. Oh, you're right. Hang on. Here we go.
I just love, my favorite thing about this song, by the way, is that Mick at one point says, because he's on a losing streak, and I just love the idea that Mick was having a hard time with he was having a tough time. And that guy was really getting under his skin because he was, right?
Yeah, let's be real.
Listen, he wrote it. I'm convinced, as much as that guy sometimes seems like a
That guy's
a
never
character,
been on a losing streak.
I know, but it must have been a moment, buddy. I think there's some vulnerability there. Those songs are too good.
Right.
I always wonder about people who write love songs and stuff about heartbreak, and then I'm like, did they have this much heartbreak always? Or like, what are they drawing on? You know, I don't know.
No one with a happy childhood ever went into show business, buddy.
was your family in the show business?
Higher?
No.
Is your family in the show business?
Where'd the acting bug come from?
Yeah, how did that happen? When had that happen?
It just was late. It was a hunch.
Just for you, nobody else in the family.
I thought this would be good. If this doesn't work out, I got the ceramics to fall back on.
But where were you? Where were you geographically when you went, you woke up that morning and you had the hunch, you listened to the hunch, you went, I'm going to be an actor.
All right, I'll tell you, the chances of me keeping this short are slim, but here we go. I'm going to try.
Go ahead.
One, I will say that when I was a kid, I really had a whole idea of fantasy of being in like show business or in comedy. And when I'd say, oh, I want to do that, like Steve Martin or something. My mom, God bless her, she would always say things like, you don't want to be like them. They're like on drugs and divorced. You don't want that life. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all divorced. By the way, cut to years later, I was like, Mom, you're divorced. What the fuck? Grew up in Modesto.
Are you on drugs?
We're in Modesto,
Oh, you grew up in Modesto.
So I grew up in Modesto, and then I went to college in L.A. I went to USC, and I was a fine art major because I always drew as a kid, and when I found out that was a major, I was like, you know, I thought I was getting away with murder. Couldn't believe let me do it. I didn't know that that was a thing.
Like, you could draw.
Yeah. So you have a degree in drawing.
They give you a degree for that.
Yeah.
You have one.
I finally got that a few years ago.
So you didn't finish.
But I did 4 years, but I didn't get my degree until, you know, just a little bit ago. It's great.
I'll need to hear more about
that. And then USC actually gave me the honor.
Sounds like you bought it on the black market the way you're talking about it, by the way.
I think it was like anything. It was like one of those COVID things where I was like, you know what? And my kids were getting ready to get their degrees. And I was like, this is the time to do it. Mm-hmm. It was either a strike or COVID. And I went back and finished up.
You went back to USC?
And then they gave me the honor to go at USC, yeah. And worked with the same professor. It was a lovely experience.
Wow.
The great Ruth Weisberg, who was my professor when I was there. And she's still... teaches. And
that's
so
wild.
She and I got to do an independent study with her. It was wonderful. And then I got to go speak at the graduation ceremony for the fine art and all that, which I thought was hilarious because all those kids had accomplished in 4 years what took me like 32. Mm-hmm. And I was there to give them advice.
What were you thinking that fine art degree was going to afford you? Career-wise, like what do all these kids, what do you take that into? Like graphic design and
well,
because one of my daughters is that's her jam. She's really gifted as an artist. My eldest daughter is actually a student at SC right now. And she's loving it. Absolutely.
Congratulations.
Loving it. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So should I encourage the 14-year-old to continue drawing? Were there options explained to you there at the school?
Well, first of all, of course you encouraged her to do what she loves doing.
Yeah. Why Jason. Would you
do that? No, I'll beat it out of her. If it's not lucrative, goddammit, I'll teach you. No, she's going to become a coder and learn Mandarin.
Fuck. Yeah, what else are you going to do, right? Keep going, honey.
Mm-hmm. No, she's going to code.
So here's what I understand now. If kids who get like a bachelor of fine arts, they just still have so many different directions they can go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're thinking, and to some degree, I think they're very attractive in whatever workforce because they were kind of just thinking outside the box all the time and being creative. Once someone gets their master's, they're going to be they're going to be an artist.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, Sean, what's your degree in?
My degree is, I never graduated, but I got an honorary doctorate in music. Yeah.
Oh, you never graduated?
No. Mm-mm.
This is breaking news. You have buried the lead on this for a while.
I went 4 years as well, and then I got an honorary doctorate.
I didn't graduate high school, so you guys got me beat.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't show. No one's ever said
it. It doesn't show. You know, it has not hurt you.
It just started drooling.
You're doing great.
You are doing great. But wait, so you get this degree from USC in fine arts and drawing, and you're like ready to start, you know, drawing stuff or tagging bridges or doing something, and and then you go at the end of all of that, you go, you know what? So what? You're in LA, and you're like, I want to be an actor. Like, how did that?
I do think I had a certain amount of conscious thinking that I was wanting to put off a midlife crisis. That I was like. Yeah, I really did. I was like, I think my parents were split and my dad was going through his, and I just thought, that doesn't look fun. And, you know, I always wanted to do this, but I never did it. So I became this. Mm-hmm. So I was considering going to get my master's in fine arts. It's really kind of what I wanted to do. You know, like when grandparents and stuff would ask you, what are you going to do with it? Mm. At first, you're like, I want to be an artist. And that, you see the expression on their face. Mm-hmm. And then you start saying, or I could do commercial work. I could about all the things you could do. But I really just wanted to be an artist. And you know, I was like going to galleries and like, you know, in LA and museums and Chris Burden and Baldessari, all these people were big inspirations. But there was a bunch of things I always wanted to try that were on my mind. Like, I knew I always wanted to do stand-up. I always thought about it'd be fun to be an actor.
That's wild,
I thought,
yeah.
Oh, it'd be great to be in a band. You know, things like that. And yeah. I thought I should try to cross all these off before moving forward.
Those all take a great deal of courage, though.
Well, what doesn't?
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, I mean, certainly standing up in front of an audience all alone with a microphone is sort of the zenith of balls.
Yeah, I was thinking of that on your movie. Yeah. I felt like they captured this thing that no one prepares you for when you do stand-up, which is the moment you step on the silence that you're created by. Is just
real quiet.
It's terrible.
It's so quiet. No one tells you it's going to be that quiet before you say a word.
Like, the healthy respect I had for stand-ups and what they do before was huge. And then it was just magnified the first time. I remember the first time going down at this Comedy Cellar. And I was doing it. I was getting introduced as my character, as Alex Novak. But I remember the first time going up there and trying to go up as a guy who had never done it before as well. I remember Bradley saying to me, like, we're doing something different. Don't try to rely on tricks. You have to go up and do this as this dude who's never done it. And going up there and just standing there, fucking, you're like, you just feel like it's so quiet and you feel like, oh my God, I'm about to fall off a cliff here.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's just, it's the best and the worst at the same time. It's simultaneously just like the most terrifying. So, stand-ups, what they do is just like, fuck, man. Like,
and round you tried it, Timothy? Did you?
Yeah, I did it for a little while. Right around the corner from Comedy Cellar in New York was a place called Boston Comedy Club. And
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah, I did.
Do you still remember some of the jokes? I'll tell you some of mine.
Oh, Sean has a really famous first.
Sean's got a great opener.
Yeah, it's a great opener.
Go ahead, Sean. Before he asked me to
sing. Told it before, but Timothy, just respond to this joke.
Sean, this relationship is like, hey, Tim, sing for us. Hey, Tim, tell us some jokes.
Yeah, perform for us, monkey.
He'll keep whipping you like a monkey.
Sean, why don't you whet the appetite? Here we go.
My opening joke was, they say ballet is one of the most difficult things to do, so I just say don't do it.
Oh, fuck.
And that's the joke, Timothy. Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. There's
never gets good.
No, never gets old or funny.
By the way, and you, Will, I appreciate you calling me Timothy, but you know, you can call me Tim.
Can I call you Tim? I didn't know you can call you Tim.
Sean, you as well.
Okay, great.
Bateman?
Not so much.
Just you're close.
Wait,
you know
do,
what
you
mean?
Guys, do you guys know each other a little bit? Do you guys have
history? Yeah, we worked together for a smidge.
Is this thing on? This is where I leave you. Close
this
in title.
This is where I leave you.
And and you remember, because, you know, by the way, I'm at Trapicchio's office. That's where I am.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, I needed a computer. I guess you can't do your show if you don't own a computer.
Do you not own a computer?
No, I don't, it turns out.
Come on.
I didn't realize that.
How fucking rad is that?
Let's start there.
Well, I mean, I got like a, you know, I got a phone and I got a thing. That's all you got to do.
Oh.
We're backing up. We're starting from here.
I don't buy it. You don't have, you being an artist, you don't have an iPad with one of those little stylus pen thingies?
No.
Wait, Tim.
You put the pencil in the paper,
you don't have
Jason.
A laptop
Come on, the
at
pencil
all?
In the
fucking
paper.
Baller.
Wait, you really, truly don't have a computer?
I don't. Well, I think honesty is very important in this.
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks for not lying.
We went and got out a old desktop computer that we still have in the house and plugged it in and started it up, and they were all USB things. And I was like, I don't think I can, it won't, I need to get
just adapters for the purposes of doing the podcast you tried to
for
do.
Doing this. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of sacrifices that went into this, guys. And
you
don't get me wrong.
I
appreciate it. I'm super honored. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a big fan. I listen. I don't listen, but I read the transcripts. And it's
sure.
Very,
sure.
The show's very, sure. Very, very, very good.
Sure, sure.
It's better in written form.
The chemistry comes across in the print.
I remember getting a note from our producer saying we're going to be producing transcripts for Tim Oliphant, and we're mailing them to him every day.
Yeah.
But Tim, you've never been tempted to buy a laptop or a desktop just to see the landscape out
What's
there.
What's going on?
Like all the different sites you can go visit to
Felt condescending.
Expose yourself
Felt
to.
A little.
Jason goes on a lot of sites and exposes himself, is what he's trying to say.
Hey, gang, ever seen one of these?
Hey, gang.
Hey, gang.
Wait. This is so dope that you don't have a laptop. Jason has 100 laptops. They're all brand new.
Yeah.
Just to look at baseball scores.
All this talk about AI and stuff. Not curious to see what the fuss is about?
But you can do all that on the little phones.
I guess you can, but you're always spreading and spreading and clicking and spreading.
Don't do your fingers like that. Stop doing that.
Spreading and sliding. It's just like,
How about Chris Nolan doesn't even have a phone? I'm so jealous.
You know, one or two people without a phone. It's the most exciting relationship.
If you know
someone without a phone and they're like, all right, so we're meeting at like 7, you know, dinner at 7.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, and then on the way there, you're like, it's so exciting. It's like being in high school
rolling
again.
The dice.
They said they'd be here.
Remember, we're all old enough. Remember like being teenagers and being like, hey, so you'll run into people, you'll go, well, let's do something. And you had to go there. And then you'd run into
people. Maybe they were there.
And maybe they were there.
And see them in the next place. Where were you?
And the night would unfold. If you go out at night, the night would just kind of unfold the way it was going to unfold.
Well, what about directions? Remember when you used to have a map book, the Thomas Guide, or even one of those fold-out maps? Or just a sheet of paper with the list of directions. Are you going to turn left on such and such, then go a mile, then turn right on such and such?
Or you had to ask people for directions.
You know what's embarrassing about having a friend without a phone as you're going to meet them. Let's say it's a 7 o'clock, you're meeting them at dinner.
Yeah.
You realize that we oftentimes are like, hey, on my way out the door, ETA 7:05.
Yeah.
And then it's like parking. Like you're literally giving the play-by-play on the way there.
Yeah.
It's when you don't have that option, you realize how embarrassing that is.
Uh-huh. But you do. You do have a phone.
I have a phone, yeah.
You do have a phone. Yeah. All right.
How about this? I was talking about this the other day with people. How about when you have plans, even with somebody you do want to see, and they go, can't make it, and the relief of not having to go to something is so great when somebody bails. They're like, hey, I can't make it, because then you're like, oh, no problem. And you're thinking like, oh, God, I get to stay home.
Found time.
Yeah,
it's money in the pocket.
Yeah, finding a 20 in an old jacket.
Yeah. Hello, friend.
Hi. Wait, you know what? I want to say, talk about old friends and working together. It makes me think. Justified, which was so good, and you were so good, and it was amazing. And over the, you said it was 5 years. I didn't realize it was 5. You did it with our old friend, Sean and my old friend, Margot Martindale.
Oh, Margot's great.
Whom I adore.
She's the best.
Must be nice to have one of those, be one of those people that when people say your name, everyone just goes, oh.
Guess what? You're one of those people.
I think
you're one of those people.
Oh,
you are.
Sean, start.
No, it's true. It's true. It's really true.
Start.
It's really true.
I think you are. Yeah, Margot Martindale, I mean, I will say, what an absolute, just a legend.
I haven't had the pleasure yet.
Oh, dude. Oh,
I'm a huge fan, though.
Yeah, you would love her.
Yeah,
I remember years ago she did that one of Krasinski's movies, and so she didn't know John, and he asked me to introduce him to her, and it ended up being really, really good. And so I said, hey, John Krasinski wants to call you, and can I give him your number? And she was like, okay. And then she called me after, she goes, look, I told him I'm going to do his fucking movie, so it better be fucking good or else this is on you, because you fucking forced me to do this. I was like, wait.
So good.
Right. You know, Margot, I mean, that's so on brand for her. And she ended up being wonderful, obviously. But she's the best.
Yeah. I had the pleasure of sitting next to her when she won an Emmy. And it was such a lovely moment. I remember, I don't know why it pops in my head, because all that is what I spent a year with, you know, that personality you were just talking about. And such a, like, whether the camera was rolling or not, you just felt like you were getting this authentic, connected, amazing, just, it was so easy.
Yeah.
And then we were at the Emmys, and her category was before mine. So I just remember that when I'm sitting next to her and they're announcing the names and all that. And then they say the winner is, and when they said her name, she squeezed my hand like it could have bruised me. Like the squeeze that happened.
Yeah.
It was the first time I kind of understood what the awards meant. Mm, you know, like I was like, that moment when that involuntarily like, oh my God, you know, and then. It was so moving. This is not much of a story, but it's just a moment that I remember sharing with her.
And then she forgot to thank you. Did she thank you when she got on stage?
She did. No, she did.
She did.
She
did.
She was classy.
She sure did.
We'll be right back.
And now back to the show.
But Timothy, you know, Tim, sorry.
No, familiar.
T-Dog.
Did you, I remember that I the other day, and I'm just remembering, I through my feed on Instagram, mm-hmm. I saw a clip of you telling the story about Deadwood, it was so funny. Can you tell what happened again? It was like the worst Deadwood story or something. It was so funny. I mean, I don't want to give it away. And if you don't want to tell it, it's you don't have to. But
no,
it's
no,
already on Instagram.
We'll talk about it later. It's already,
I know,
exactly.
but it's so funny.
It was so small. Well, you know, Milt stories. You guys know the Milt. You guys have heard the Milt stories over the years?
We've heard some rumblings. But I bet you Tracy is not.
No.
Sean's sister. She's not hip to the Hollywood stories.
David Milch, by the way, his book. Have you read his?
No,
I don't read. Oh,
David so Milch for Tracy created Deadwood, amongst other things.
Yeah, NYPD Blue, Hill Street Blues,
legend.
Deadwood, and just a legend of a writer and one of these guys who graduated first in his class at Yale, had a heroin addiction. You know, like a combination of brilliance and life. Experiences that often don't go together, you know? Right. So almost every day on that set was these kind of stories. But we had the second season? We had a storyline where I'm married to my, which wasn't what really happened in real life, which is, and my character was a real guy, Seth Bullock. But anyway, he's married to his brother's widow and was raising his brother's child as his own kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we had this kid and like a lot, I think there was rumblings on set one day that there was some issue with the kid as either his reps or his mother, but David was really upset about something. And I was like, I'm not gonna pay attention. I'm just doing my thing. All I know is that by lunch, there was a knock on my trailer door. And I open, it's David, which is unusual. And I said, "What's up?" And he says, "We're going to kill the kid." And
we're just going to kill him.
This is the next minute. So good. Such classic showbiz moment that happened after that. He goes, I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, we're going to kill the kid." And this is the showbiz part. He goes, "It's going to be great for you. It's going to be really, it's going to be some really nice, some wonderful.
There's more room for you. And a great, scenes, great moment.
Some wonder moments, these amazing moments. And, he's going to be, killed and you'll be on his bedside and he talking to him and as if you're his brother and. You're his brother, your brother, and wonderful. And it's going to be good for the kid, too.
He'll free him up for other opportunities.
And yeah, we did, the whole season was this epic story that whatever happened that morning turned into the season.
That's so amazing.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
JB, as an actor who directs, how cognizant are you of... of understanding the process that they're going through when you're giving a note?
Yeah, I mean, it's all about, you're going to get a worse performance if you leave that note session with the actor and the actor feels bad, you know?
Right. It's
all people skills, right? You just got to prop them up while you're telling them to be
all right,
different.
Listen, here's my, I did a movie with Larry Kasdan. Just a dream working with him. And he came up to me after, I think, more than one take. Yeah, it was a couple, because he said to me, he said, Tim, there's a joke there, but we wouldn't know it because you keep fucking it up. Should we just move on, or do you want to try it again?
Hey, Tim, you get this, right?
And
that's circles the line.
Very usable, like, okay, lightning. That was a good note.
I just had another that you just reminded me. I just did this play in New York, and Lee Silverman, who's brilliant, she's an incredible director and a good friend, and she goes at the first run through. It's a one-man show. I did the whole thing the very first time. And I go, I feel like I'm just saying words. And she goes, yeah, yeah, it looks like that.
Oh, fuck.
Wow.
Which was great. It was the kick in the I needed a kick in the pants.
But you were just so happy you got through it and you didn't forget a line, I'll bet, probably, right? I mean, that was the big test.
Yeah, but I mean, I needed to actually think about what I was saying.
Now, right. On the other hand, I did a couple months on with Soderbergh. Forgive me for dropping a name. That's what you do here, right?
Sure.
3 months.
Yeah.
Not a single note.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrifying.
For 3 months.
That's terrifying in its own way.
3 months. And once I was in a car with him. I was driving. It's just me and him. And he's, you know, operating. And I got back in the car and I said, well, what do you think? And he goes, if on a scale of 1 to 10, that was a 7, maybe an 8. And I was like, all right, cool. That was technically our one exchange.
No way. No
one way. Performance exchange.
Yeah, but he's also editing too.
You know, what's interesting, so, yeah. I was going to say, interesting you mentioned Soderbergh because he is operating. And when we were doing our movie Is This Thing On with Bradley, and we're old friends, and he's also operating, right? Bradley operated that whole film.
Yeah.
So he, and as you know, is very close. You know, he's like, camera's in my face. And we'd start to roll. We're rolling, blah, blah, blah. And he put the camera up. We haven't even started yet. And then he put it down for a second. He'd look, and he's like this far, and he'd go, no acting. And then the camera right back up. And I'm like, fuck. Like, pre.
I love that.
And he was right.
I love that.
And it was so disarming. Like, you know, I had one time also, I did two of these Ninja Turtle movies years ago, like 10, 15 years ago. And we were in Madison Square Garden, and it was produced by Michael Bay. But he came in one day to shoot all this stuff at Madison Square Garden. We shot at a Knicks game, and then they cleared out, and then we did this stuff on the floor. And he decided to operate. He wanted to do this one bit where it kind of, and like the camera goes off this action, then up to me in the front row. He goes, okay, reset. And it was like chaotic and stuff was going, and he's really on top of it. He knows where everything is, and he's got a crane going at the same time, and he's operating, and his camera's down, and he's like following along the ball, and then he just goes like this, and he just goes right up onto me and just goes, say something funny. I'm like, oh, fuck. Literally like that. It was a nightmare. And I'm like, ah, and I said something super sweaty.
Farts.
You know what I mean? Yeah exactly.
Yeah.
I can't wait to talk a little bit about, you've got a couple things coming. You've got this mini series called the 5-Star Weekend.
The kids moved out. I've been working more than I've ever in my life.
Yeah, I mean, you have...
I guess I don't have to go to a tennis tournament this weekend. So yeah, let's go.
Alien Earth is renewed for season 2. Stick season 2 has been renewed for season 2.
We just wrapped that. That was a joy of a gig.
Adventures of Cliff Booth, which is coming out around Christmas time.
Speaking of no notes, Fincher.
Yeah, talk about the Adventures of Cliff Booth. I want to know about this.
Yeah, what is it? Is it a film?
That's the prequel to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, right?
Oh.
Is it prequel or sequel?
It's a sequel.
Yeah.
Sequel, but isn't it the time before Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
If I get this wrong, it wouldn't be that surprising, but I'm pretty sure it's after. You know, it's after.
Okay.
It's,
okay.
Yeah, I this love is, that you're it's, not sure. It's the Adventures of Cliff Booth, and it's later. Yeah.
Gotcha.
I think we're in the 70s.
And so Fincher, light touch. I'm not saying that sarcastically, but I would imagine performance notes.
My favorite thing to do was this after we'd finished a take is before he said anything, I'd say, can I get one more? If I could just get one more.
Once again.
You know, Tracy, he's famous for many takes. We're talking, right?
Yes.
We're telling Tracy.
Yeah, that's good. That was
good usage of Tracy.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks. Yeah, so we would do, I did a scene, for like 2 days, day and a half. I'd never done that, anything like that. I felt like I was pledging a fraternity. Felt a little bit let's go again. Let's do it. Fuck yeah, I want to be part of this. Let's go.
Was it technical? Yeah, was it mostly because of technical and framing and
composition
light thing?
Honestly, it's oftentimes multiple. It's oftentimes everything. It's okay on that moment, maybe this. And then when you lift your hand up, show me where it is. Okay, now move it just an inch left. Okay, now down just a half inch, lift it right there. And you're like, okay. It's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So it's everything from when you lean forward, don't lean quite that far, a little there. So everything, it can get super, super technical visually, but it can also get very, very specific about, you know, when you do that, maybe it's more of an order. Maybe it's more of a, like... You know,
so it will sometimes be performance.
It's almost like doing a run of a play, you know, like a scene, but you're doing it so many times. You're doing it the master. Oh. You're doing like 20 times, and then you're pushing 20 times. And you're like, so for a day and a half, you're just doing this scene.
What was the most number of pages you did on one day? Was there ever more than 3 pages in a day? I bet there was.
No, I'm very briefly in it. So I just am showing up for this thing, and... I don't know how many pages that was, but we shot it for a day and a half.
Wow.
We didn't. My coverage was day 2. It was it was fascinating. And because so I loved it. Mm. I really loved it. And I think years ago when I was reading about him, I just thought, no fucking way, life's too short. But for whatever reason, at this point in my, I just was like, yeah, let's do 30 takes. Great.
Oh, man, I just sweep
floors. It's an experience, if nothing else.
But it throws you to there's a surreal quality that starts to happen that you don't expect, which is you're doing it so many times, it's hard to shut out the voice that feels like you're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kiss of death, right? So you have to, you also start to lose your instincts because, I mean, it really is like a, you know, it's like, all right, pledging the fraternity here, and they're going to break me down, and I'm not going to crack.
Well, he's talked about that. He's talked about some of the strategy is to,
because
like, yeah,
if you do a great take, you know that feeling, right, Jason? Where you finish a take and you think, oh, that just felt so money. Right. The fact that you're going to do 15 more after that take, you start to go, maybe it wasn't that good. I don't know.
You
have to shut that voice out because you just have to realize. No,
but he talks about that sometimes he'll do a bunch of takes just to get the actor to stop acting, you know, because you just run out of acting ideas and then you just end up just saying the fucking lines. And that's sometimes what he's looking for is, I don't want performance. Just say the lines and let's
just
get
slide
on.
Down the wall. Just fall out of frame.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, kind of.
You're doing too much. Yeah.
But I feel like I've gotten... I mean, say this with a grain of salt, but for the most part, my technique for the last decade or so has been memorizing the lines and then memorizing them to exhaustion. So I show up hopefully in that place.
Mm, yeah.
So then to show up and then keep going, it's like you have to readjust.
Sean's motto is always like, does this put me on the 405 this next take? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
What do they need?
Yeah. Sure. How do you expect me to act like this? How do you expect me to act that well when you've seen the craft service table and we both know that's fucked up?
Yeah, terrible. Yeah.
Wait, so we have to, because I can't believe it's been an hour already. I feel like I could talk to you about this shit for fucking ever.
Yeah.
Talk about Lucky. Lucky is about to come out, this new series. We have
What's
to mention
Lucky?
It. Yeah.
So I got Lucky is also with the same preface as whether it's a prequel or a sequel. If I get some of this wrong, it won't be surprising.
Okay.
But I believe Apple... It's on Apple TV, and it's Anya Taylor-Joy, Annette Bening.
She's great. Yeah, amazing,
lovely. Yeah. Tropper wrote it. He's
Jonathan
he's
Tropper,
wrote the movie that you and I did together.
Yep. Jonathan Tropper.
It's kind of a thriller.
Friends and Neighbors, Jonathan Tropper, right?
Is correct.
There you go. So that was cool. And then there's this... that was fantastic.
That's good. No, that's good. Very good.
Great.
You've done a good job.
Yeah, I think people really are leaning incredible. Forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Leaning, no, they're going to watch
leaning
now.
Forward. Yeah, yeah. And now I'm going to cut. I'm going to move on so that just leaves them wanting more. And then there's the 5-Star Weekend with Jennifer Garner and Peacock. And that's lovely. That was...
Look at you. You just go. Love it.
Dude,
it's really awesome.
It's insane.
It's kind of fun.
It's insane.
And thanks. I appreciate it. And then... I don't. The kids moved out. I think there's a lot of time on the hands.
Yeah.
And then the Larry David thing, I think, airs after.
Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Out, before this comes out. So, that 250-year thing.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Oh, shit.
Oh, he's going to play at Trump's 250-year celebration?
No.
He's filling in for Milli Vanilli.
Oh, they filled it.
Yeah. And then I'm just doing percussion, I guess.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Playing the maracas?
I'm in that too, Tim.
Oh, yes!
Yeah, yeah.
And it's fun?
Yeah, super fun. So, and when I think it comes out soon, like in June or something, or July. Well, July.
Yeah, July, right?
Oh, Sean, do you want to talk a little bit about what you got coming
out? No, tell me. How was it? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was fun. What did you do? What was your scenario? So the concept is Larry David did a show for HBO to celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States, and he put himself into historical scenarios to reenact them. And mine was the Wright brothers, and it was me, John Hamm, and Larry David. And John Hamm and I played Orville and the Wright brothers, and he played Lawrence Wright, the third Wright brother, and he was complaining about the middle seat on the plane that we just invented. And and yours is what?
I'm OK Corral.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I'm one of the Earp brothers. And Larry, the whole OK Corral, Larry sets it off. It's all, it was him.
Yeah.
Really, it seems like plenty of opportunity to hire Jason, either you or me, Will.
Yeah, our phone numbers must, we haven't changed in a minute. That's weird.
No.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm going to just look that up. I'm going to.
Maybe I should check my junk mail.
Sean, it was more on you because I feel like you should have said something on their behalf.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? You've seen them all the time.
I do feel like everyone in town has been on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Will, did you do it?
No, you and I did not do it.
You and I did not. I don't think he likes us.
You know what Larry actually said to me last, this is a true story so I can say it. He said to me about 6 months ago, how come you were never on Curb? And I go, you never asked me.
Yeah.
And he was like, huh? And then I said, I think I'm too tall anyway. I did say that to him.
We've had him on the podcast, haven't we?
Have. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. I've never been in a Bateman project. Should we just get to that right now? Is she directing something?
Sean, you and I have never been in a Jason Bateman joint.
Wait, you guys haven't either?
No.
Wait, what?
He's directed like a bunch of things.
Oh, are you going through a canyon? You can't hear us right now? Are you?
Guys, can you hear me?
Do we lose
you? I hear you. Can you hear me? Guys, I'm going to call you back. I'll call you back.
Bateman, you send me a call sheet. I'll show up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to put all three of you in one scene and then cut it. And then I'm going to cut it.
Then what do you mean cut it? You won't be able to cut this. It'll be so vital. Speaking of vital, you're vital to showbiz, Tim Olyphant. You are just an absolute gem. And it's been awesome having you. Dude, continued success. Keep staying busy because it's so great watching you, dude.
Yeah, and give Karen and Christine their office back.
Yeah.
Back at you guys. It was a pleasure. Thank you. I appreciate
pleasure.
It.
We look forward to it. Five star weekend. Lucky. All this stuff. Congrats. And what a joy. What a joy. The great Tim Olyphant. Thank you. You're gonna get a round of applause.
Yeah.
I think that's the first goodbye applause we've done.
I think so too.
Ever.
Warranted.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure.
Likewise, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, dude.
Bye, buddy. What about that Tim Olyphant, huh? He's a good dude. He's a real good dude. He's easy on the eyes. He's got talent.
I know.
You know? What's not to love? That's why he works so much.
And he does have a reputation that he's one of the nicest guys. That's his reputation.
Everybody loves him. I remember Margo saying how much she loved him back in the day.
Do they say that about any of us?
About us? About Sean and me, yeah.
I don't think so.
They say about Sean and me all the time.
You ever heard anything bad about me?
Let me just say, I would not look it up. Where are you? If you want to have a continued good rest of your day, I would not investigate.
Yeah. Don't dig. No need to dig. Don't.
Everybody loves Jakey Bates.
You can find some naysayers, I'll bet.
No.
What about any of us?
But boy, that Tim Olyphant. Nope, you get tens across the board.
Did we forgot to plug? We forgot to plug... Hollywood
the bowl?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Maybe just roll the tape on that.
October 17th.
What?
What do you do?
Hollywood Bowl. You go to smartlist.com/live and you get tickets. Sorry. You go to smartlist.com/live and you get tickets.
Who's this?
For the Hollywood Bowl, October 17th.
We're going to have some surprise guests there?
We're going to have
one
some surprise
two?
Guests. We're
gonna have a couple. Two or one? Just a couple? Surprise. Okay.
Yeah. You go to smartlist.com/live and you can get tickets for you or for a friend, Sean. You can. They're not free. You do.
What do you do if you get them for a friend? You have to.
You have to.
Bye.
Smartlist.com/live.
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 Will audio.
$5 foot long, $5.
Smart. Nice. Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Michael Grant Terry, Rob Armjarv, and Bennett Barbico.
Smartless.